At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So do Jeep people carry ducks with them in case they see another Jeep so that they can leave a duck on the Jeep?
The act of placing a rubber duck on someone's Jeep called Jeep ducking or duck duck Jeep began with one person named Allison Parliament from town in Canada, province of Ontario. She unknowingly started a movement of kindness, fellowship, and recognition with that first rubber duck. Ugh. Allison's reason for perching the duck on a Jeep Wrangler, just like hers, that she saw, blah, 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 to bring herself a small sense of joy after a frightening verbal and physical encounter with someone earlier that day.
Oh.
2 years later, that single gesture has morphed into the Jeep ducking craze that has swept throughout the Jeep enthusiast community.
Doesn't bring me joy. It doesn't bring you joy either, right?
What are the rules?
Oh, what are the rules?
Who can duck? Is it only for Jeeps?
Okay.
Is like, an act of kindness, healing of sorts, as well as recognition of and greeting a fellow Jeep owner.
Get out of here.
But it can be just that you like their Jeep or the same Jeep you have or maybe a classic.
Okay.
Is Duck Duck Jeep only for Wranglers? No.
Oh.
It is all about appreciating the model.
So then what, a Jeep Cherokee you could put? Because the Jeep Cherokee isn't even really a Jeep. It's a Jeep brand.
What is a Jeep?
A Jeep Cherokee?
Yeah.
It's like an SUV.
But Jeeps are SUVs. What do you mean?
Well, no, but like it looks like a typical, like a Toyota Quadrunner.
No. The Wrangler is the, you're thinking, you got it all mixed up.
Oh, no, I don't.
The Wrangler is the one that's got like the soft top.
I'm saying the Jeep Cherokee.
Oh, the Cherokee.
Yes.
The Cherokee. Well, now there's so many.
Right.
I think there's a whole handful of them that are not,
Jeep Cherokee's not a Jeep. It's a Jeep brand, but it's not a Jeep Renegade.
What's
adjacent.
A Renegade?
What's a Renegade's like that? The Jeep. That's like a Jeep.
Not a Wrangler. Are you thinking of the Wrangler?
I think they're the same thing. Let me look this up. Hold on. Jeep.
I think you may have just made up a type of a Jeep.
Renegade. No, the Renegade is very similar to the Wrangler, except without the soft top.
So it's got no top or it's got a hard top?
You got a hard top to it. But it looks kind of like a Honda CR-V. A little bit.
So either way, there's really no, what are the rules? There are really not any strict rules. That's about it. And the lady's dead now.
Oh, I just saw that. She died the other day.
Yeah. Yeah, they updated the, I didn't realize it was the other day. The story at the top said, I was going to work you into a shoot where I could see how many bad things you said about her before I told you that she died. the weekend of June 22nd.
Oh, damn. Like last weekend.
Oh, my God. Hit by a Jeep.
And then choked to death on the plastic duck that flew off it. She would have lived, but then the plastic duck flew into her windpipe.
Wait.
What?
You're off on the Renegade.
All right.
The Renegade is this looking thing. Look at that thing.
That looks more like a Cherokee.
Yeah, that's a...
Okay.
Like, that is... I don't know. I mean, but people buy the Jeep name.
Yeah, they do. But the Wrangler is the real Jeep. Like, a Wrangler is a Jeep.
Dude, we've taken a couple vacations where we got Wranglers. Dude, they're so fun. I mean,
because
now, like the hard top ones that they have, like it's just a latch. Like it's just these like latches that you just pop out, and then some of them have beds even, but you can just stick them right in the back seat, and then you're just rolling free and easy.
I used to drive a Suzuki Samurai, which was not quite a Jeep, but it's like a baby lawnmower version of a Jeep of a Jeep Wrangler.
It's kind of like a Tracker.
Yes, very much so. It predated the Tracker.
Dude, unknown, not so well documented fact about my wife. She used to have a Tracker that was like tricked out. Like they used to go to car shows and stuff.
With a Tracker.
With her Tracker. I think it was lowered.
Oh, that's so dope.
Yeah, very, very Jersey.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Very
Danielle Danielle drove a lowered Tracker.
A lowered Tracker that I think had rims on it, and I think she was constantly getting stuff done to it. And yeah, she was in the community. She was in the lifestyle, as we say.
Do you think she would have ducked?
No. I don't think so. But you know, if it brings them joy. Like,
I guess.
And I've seen this as well. There's a picture of one here where they're like on the hood. Like, why would you do that? And I'm not a car guy. I don't even care what your car looks like, but that just seems silly.
But you place it on the hood while you're driving?
It looks like on this thing, it looks like they're attached. Hmm. I don't know if they're glued or what, but.
Seems silly.
Yeah, well, we learned a lot today.
We did, and rest in peace, Shifty Shellshock, another casualty of Dr. Drew's celebrity rehab.
Man, there's not many deaths out there where the person can die fairly young and you go, man, they really cheated death.
Oh, yeah.
Like the fact that when I saw it this morning, it was from a not so great publication, and I wondered if it was one of those things where people just reshare it.
Yeah.
Like he could have and probably should have been gone 15 years ago.
Oh,
and
my
the fact
God, yeah.
he was able to fight the demons long enough to keep him at bay till today. You think there was any chance for Crazy Town? Like, if he was sober, like, were they still always going to be a one-hit wonder? Or
yeah.
Could he have done more?
No. He exceeded. Because if you remember, we saw a couple of clips from them in concert the last couple of years where he was forgetting the lyrics. Even if he had remembered them, I don't think they would have done anything. No one would have taken the over on him turning 50 years old.
Oh, he was fit. Was that how old he was?
He was 49. He almost made it.
Did they have that in the Hard Rock Bet app?
No, I looked to see if I could have put money on it, but like he damn near made it to 50, which is a huge victory. Huge.
What are the regulations on things that you can gamble on?
I know the state of Florida, or at least the Hard Rock app, it's just
like if the Hard Rock wanted to do something, could they? And they got what I was thinking was they were partnered up with the station for some period of time.
Yes.
So I was thinking, like, what if they did the death pool and they put it on the Hard Rock app as like a partnership with the station?
Yeah, I don't know if I don't know what the state of Florida limits them from doing. It's only sports, and I mean, if you extend the definition of sports, there's a lot of table tennis. You can ask Corey Cardinal; he gambles on that.
I mean, some people even bet on baseball.
I did. Shifty Shellshock, Seth Binzer, dead. He was addicted to cocaine, both powder and crack. Daniel Baldwin, still alive. His was cocaine on Celebrity Rehab. Mary Carey, my good friend, still alive. Alcohol. Jeff Conaway, actor, dead. China, Joni Laura, dead. Brigitte Nielsen,
she's alive.
Okay.
Foofy.
Jessica Sierra, she alive from American Idol? She got arrested
right
here in Tampa.
She's alive. All 38 right. years old.
There we go.
Hopefully she's out there.
Steven Adler, I believe, is dead, right? The former Guns N' Roses drummer.
Are we still in the first season or are we in the...
This is season two.
Oh, we moved on to season two.
Yeah,
okay.
I think Steven Adler's dead. Stand by.
That seems...
Nope, still alive.
Oh, he's 59. Damn.
Wow.
Dude, there was... I always remember because when was it? It was a girl from, I want to say it was a girl from TLC, but maybe not. Remember there was a girl who was there for weed?
Mm-hmm. She was from, not Destiny's Child, not TLC, but one of those black R&B female.
3LW?
That might have been it. No, Jamie Foxworth, former child actress. Model and singer.
Oh, marijuana.
Oh, she was on Family Matters. That's right.
Do you think...
and she was in She, S-H-E.
Do you think that, like, at that point, you're just trying to do anything to get yourself a little bit of shine?
Yes.
Like, by going into celebrity rehab where these people are like, literally killing themselves? And
absolutely.
You're like, I smoke blunts.
Yeah, if you go on that because you smoke too much weed, you're just looking for a little run.
I do wonder how many people are in real rehab facilities for weed. Like, I mean, is it like 1%? Is it way more than we would ever imagine?
It's a good question. I don't know the answer.
Dude, Rodney King.
Yeah, dead, right?
Yeah. What happened to him? He like fell in a pool or something?
I don't remember how he passed. I know that Tawny Catane, also dead, painkillers. Amber Smith, still alive.
Dude, I have to say, like, if we're just looking at the stats for Dr. Drew, like,
not
he's
good.
Not doing too good.
No, he's got blood on his hands.
Yeah, I mean, what was really going on in these, sometimes I get celebrity rehab mixed up with the surreal life.
Oh, it's easy to do.
Because I think that there was also some crossover.
Oh, my God, yeah. Nurse Shelly, the resident technician who ran the floor, was kind of hot. Remember, she had... blonde hair and glasses.
This is on Celebrity Rehab?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. Oh. No, I don't remember anybody.
Oh.
Like, outside of Dr. Drew and maybe a few of the people.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. On Father's Day 2012, Rodney King, dead underwater in the bottom of a swimming pool.
Oh, can't we all just get along?
Man. Oh, 28 years to the day after his dad was found dead face down in a bathtub. To the
what?
Day.
What?
Wow.
That's crazy.
That is pretty crazy.
So rest in peace, Shifty Shellshock. We'll play your song today.
Oh, man.
Song.
Dude.
Singular.
How about that video I sent you of your buddy Chris Kirkpatrick, by the way?
Well, I know that you intended it to mock Mr. Kirkpatrick, especially on the heels of his Panthers winning last night, but it's not a strong statement that O-Town was behind him.
Well, I got to say, you're not wrong, but I also feel like comparing apples to oranges with NSYNC to O-Town, I'm so curious like what that was, because the show was coming to the sound. So they're not actually doing malls, but this was like some sort of pop-up. I don't know if they came already, but it was like the My2K tour with Chris Kirkpatrick and O-Town.
I think they did.
So I don't say this as an excuse. I just think maybe that was like a daytime performance in the hopes of selling some tickets. But I if I'm JT and the rest of the crew, are we mad that Chris Kirkpatrick is out there doing NSYNC songs with another boy band?
I think we're less mad and more sad. I think it's more of a pity thing than anger, because good God, it's just so sad.
It is tough. Like one of the toughest genres to stay relevant in. Like if you're a boy band, like you can't be a boy band forever. So I think just attempting to do the moves and be still a boy band with those songs, it's going to hit no matter what. Somehow, New Kids on the Block have done it fairly tastefully.
Yeah. Actually, I think of all the boy bands, I think they did it best.
Yeah, they kind of have segued into being this more like modern adult version. And they all still look really, really good.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're holding up. But yeah, my boys in O-Town, Chris Kirkpatrick, man, they're giving it a go.
Did New Edition ever try to do a reunion or anything?
I feel like they did.
Like Ronnie, Bobby, Ricky, Mike, Bobby.
Not that long ago.
Right, I said Bobby twice. Ronnie, Bobby, I mean, that's, Ricky, Mike, and Ralph.
They can do that, though.
Is it because Black Don't Crack?
Absolutely, yes. That is absolutely why.
Did you see the story of the 30-year-old lady, the update, the one who tried to pose as a high school girl and got braces? Remember, she got busted for like going to a high school.
Yeah, not to be confused, not the one local girl who was like the cute young blonde who was dating high school boys. This was a lady who was she going there to do something for her? What was her goal?
I don't even know. It never even said like what she was trying to do.
Yeah, I remember the story though. What happened? What happened?
Well, it turns out that she was living with a therapist who allegedly knew that she was fronting as a high school girl.
Oh.
But was allowing her to, like, do it?
Well, doesn't some stuff fall? Well, I guess she's breaking the law.
Yeah,
that's
fraud.
That's also a big part of what's happening on The Sopranos is the, doctor-patient privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what can you share with the police? Like, if you know that she's actively committing a... I thought it was only if someone's life's in danger.
Yeah, I think if someone or if they are threatening someone's life or if their life is in danger, I think you can go. But I don't think she was her therapist. I think she was just a therapist. And the
I'm confused. How did she know?
She was living with her.
Oh, living with her. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, she's 20. Let's see here. Hold on. 32 years old. And she, astonishing story of millionaire social worker, 32, who posed as 13-year-old trafficked orphan to attend high school, three different high schools. Yeah, she got like $1 million in a settlement, and she was a social worker, but she was able to masquerade as a traumatized high schooler for almost a year while keeping up her full-time job as a social worker.
What the hell? That is so was she doing it for the money or the attention or...
Not even sure why, but the reason I thought of it is because when we said Black Don't Crack, she went to a school that was mostly Black and Hispanic, and she was taunted. She was taunted with insults.
You old bitch.
No, it's white cracks early.
Well, I mean, little did they know She was cracking right on time.
The school is predominantly Black and Hispanic students who reportedly told Hewitt, "White cracks early." Insane.
That's funny. Dude, that reminds me of that story I was telling you about that new documentary, The Perfect Wife. The woman that, like, stage her own kidnap. Like, I think there are people out there, this is the Papini, whatever the hell her first name is, they just want the attention. Like, just the idea of being a victim is enough reason to do it. Like, and she got some money, too, from, like, victim groups and stuff. But I think there are some people out there that just get a total boner for being able to be a victim.
Yeah, and, man, I would just rather not be known than to be known as being a victim. Hello there. It's John Andrew in your afternoon. Who are you?
Elaine.
Hi, Elaine. How you doing today?
Good. How are you guys?
Very well. Would you agree or disagree that white cracks early?
Oh, yeah.
There we go.
Especially here in Florida.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my sun. Oh, my God, yeah. What can we do for you, young lady?
Yeah, I just want to make a comment about boy bands.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
The only one that survived the ages was the Jackson 5.
That's not really
they're the first boy band, and Michael always kept his tributes, you know, to four or five songs on stage.
It was interesting watching that Thriller documentary in that I agree that they stayed relevant, but I think without Michael, they wouldn't have been able to do that because wasn't that part of that?
No, they suck. They literally suck.
Oh, easy. Come on, Jermaine and Marlon and Tito, they've got feelings too, Elaine.
But remember, they didn't even really actually tour on Thriller. They went, rather than doing a Thriller tour,
Victory.
They did that Jackson 5 tour.
Yeah, the Victory, the Jacksons. Yeah, that was.
Oh, gosh, poor Michael. You could see him suffering on the stage when they did that. And then when he did his last show in Toronto, and they're all together, and he just told them straight out and the whole audience, okay, bye, that's the last show. We're not going to any other tours.
Quite serendipitous, Elaine, that you would mention Michael Jackson today because, A,
today
is the day that Michael passed.
Wait.
I know.
What?
I've been crying all day.
We talked about it the other day.
Oh, we did. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
It
wasn't
happen.
The day. Okay, no. Because I remember telling you I was in the Green Iguana waiting area when I got the news.
That's true. I didn't wait to take on that burger challenge. Bubbles' birthday is today, and he's celebrating it right here in the Tampa Bay area. A robust, 41 years old?
Yeah, 46 years old? He's still thriving. Would love to get him on the phone, maybe, or, you know, I don't know if we could get him in studio, but I don't know what his travel schedule is like these days, but I think Bubbles would be a great addition.
Yeah, he's at the center, for the Great Apes, right up the road a little bit in Tampa Bay.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, the last time I saw him on video, he was massive. He's like 400 pounds or something.
Bubbles is a big chimp. And then, we're going to be playing a Michael Jackson game in about a half hour to give away some fantastic prizes. So,
I could probably win that. I'm pretty good at his trivia.
This one's a spank the rank top 10 Michael Jackson.
But you wasted your call, so
you did. Sorry.
Everybody remember that in the 2 o'clock hour.
Yeah, when Elaine calls, start tweeting us and say, hey, that's that bitch Elaine. Or Elaine, you could always change your name. That's what I don't say this to people, but if you could just disguise your voice a little bit.
Just use a fake name.
If you need to make a second call to the show, you know, like.
Or just make your first call very unmemorable.
Right.
Like, just make a first terrible call or make no first call.
Right. That's the best way to get a second call through is to not make a first call. Hello, he's John and I'm Drew. Who are you?
This is Josh.
Hi, Josh. How you doing today, pal?
So, I'm all right. I just to rehash an old topic, you guys are just talking about them Jeeps and the ducks and all that jazz.
Yes, sir.
But real Jeeps don't have dashboards to put a duck on. I'm just saying.
Like a Wrangler doesn't have a dashboard?
I'm talking about in the 80s, they created this dashboard on a Jeep, and it was very reminiscent to the minivans. It was literally the same dashboard that a minivan had. Before then, it was just flat metal across. That was it. That's all you got in a Jeep back in the 70s.
So the 70s Jeeps, you're telling me, had no dashboards whatsoever? And that's
none. It was just flat metal across it. There was nothing to go and stick a duck on.
That's quite the dashboard confessional.
That was the generation of Jeeps that I had.
As for now, I'm going to sing the saddest song.
Dude, people always try to turn me on to them. Like, people would be like, hey, I think you'd like them.
I would never think you would.
No,
like
I trust me, I don't. But I don't know. Like, what are the? They're just are they acoustic-y?
They're acoustic-y emo.
Yeah, which I like acoustic and I like emo. Well, I like some things emo, but I just never.
People said to you you would like. Oh yeah, very.
Like that's, I think that's the thing that loses me is I like rugged emo.
I got into them for a very brief period of time because I saw them open for Beck. And everyone was singing along to their songs. And I thought, if all of these people know every word to their songs, they must be pretty good. Turns out I was wrong. By the way, did you see that Andrew McMahon has reunited the band Something Corporate? I don't know if you even know these names.
I know. And let me guess, they're playing a 97X event.
They were in Daily Mail today.
Oh,
they're doing a tour.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
He's got that Daily Mail rub.
I guess I didn't know that many people outside of this building knew about them. This is their MTV Unplugged.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Whatever's going on with the vocals are not, that's what's making me not like it.
Yeah, it's buried too much.
Yeah.
But listen to I'll get it. Everybody knows all the words.
A lot of sad people out there.
But as for me, I wish that I was anywhere with anyone.
He's got a little bit of Stephen Jenkins in him.
Yeah, oh yeah, he's probably had a lot of Stephen Jenkins in him.
Yeah.
And by the way, his name's Chris Carrabba. He is the nephew of Johnny and Damian Carrabba, who started the restaurant.
I have heard that, yeah. I heard that in their early shows, they all took place in Carrabba's.
True story. And he used to sing the menu to people if they would be kind of indecisive on what to get. He'd go, chicken Diablo.
Well, and I don't know if you know this, in the original Carrabba's location, when it was your birthday, he and some of the early members of Dashboard would come out and perform the birthday song.
True story.
All dressed as like Chef Boyardee with like fake mustaches and big white hats.
Chef Boyardee. Wait, his real name was Boyardee, right?
Boyardee.
I never remember if this is something I made up or if it's real. I think his real name was Chef Boyardee.
Boyardee. Well, I mean, it is, yeah. I mean, you funnel it through, you know, some of the whitest population on earth, and you're going to come out with Boyardee.
I used to eat those raviolis.
Oh, dude.
I used to just open up the can. I couldn't even wait to warm it up on the stove. That sound that it would make, though, when you would open it and pour the can into the pot, it would go like.
Oh, yeah. It's talking to you, Daddy.
Like a queef.
Yeah.
Chef Boyardee.
Chef Boyardee's talking to you, Daddy. Chef Boyardee.
I'm never
going to stop loving. I mean, I don't eat them,
right.
But I will never say a bad word about them. Like, I still, that meat that's in there has yet to be recreated.
Oh, that ain't meat.
No, but nobody's been able to perfect that flavor of the inside filling of
to this day, John, I will empty out the beef filling and turn it into a beef patty.
Oh, just grill it up.
Just grill it up on the George Foreman.
Dude, that would be a great... like bit for some sort of crazy cooking channel. I wonder if anybody's ever done it. Like you just hollow them all out and make it into a patty and then make yourself like a legit burger and then put something super expensive on it. Put like truffle on it or something.
Truffle oil with truffle fries and a Boyardee burger. Oh my God.
That's pretty sweet.
We got to do that. Although to get enough meat to make a burger, you'd have to get the like 128-ounce can of it.
Well, and it probably came after your era of eating Boyardee's products because they did like an extra large and they still have it.
Oh.
So remember how they were like little like this?
Yeah.
Yeah, they now have ones that are huge.
Big old raviolis?
So if you got a huge can, it would probably take you 5 to make a hamburger patty.
You could just go for their spaghetti and meatballs and use those
meatballs. Dude, the thing is, those seem so solidified. Like, I don't think you're going to be able to break those down enough.
Ugh.
Did you ever get the, and I don't know, these might have came later, the...
Roller coasters?
No, the SpaghettiOs raviolis, I think, right?
Wait, SpaghettiO raviolis?
Yeah. SpaghettiO had their own ravioli, and they were round and had little...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are a different taste.
Yeah, well, a different company, Franco-American.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have their place.
Yeah. Oh, my mom would get us. That sauce is the worst sauce.
Oh,
the
that's SpaghettiO so good.
Sauce. Oh my God.
Dude, a lot of times if I'm making a nice pasta dish at home, I'll just use the sauce from the raviolis or the SpaghettiOs. Like I make a nice de pepe or a rigatón.
Cacio
de pepe, a little of the red sauce, a little pepper, a little parm. You know, I'll do like a short rib rigatón, and I'll just pour the SpaghettiO juice in there.
Oh,
it's a nice bite.
Their advertising thing used to be "Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs." Yeah. Like that's a pretty bad slogan. Yeah, like what are we having dinner tonight?
We're living in a van. It's SpaghettiOs.
Uh-oh, we're living below the poverty line. SpaghettiOs. Nothing against those.
Dude, to stay in the, we ate it growing up, but I feel that I can say it. It's like I can say this word.
All right.
The white trash food.
Yeah.
Dude, did you ever see the Hamburger Helper hash brown edition?
No.
It was like a Philly cheesesteak hash browns. So it was a Hamburger Helper, but rather than noodles, it has hash browns.
Oh.
So I saw a thing online over the weekend where people are taking that and making it with ground up like hot breakfast sausage with their eggs.
Oh, I could see that.
Sounds nice.
Sounds tasty. When I moved out on my own, I could not yet cook food, I would get tuna helper because all you had to do is like open up a can of tuna.
Dude, that is the grossest thing I've ever. Well, no, don't get me wrong. That's just as gross as tuna casserole, what you eat.
And tuna casserole is delicious. That's a
delicacy. It's the same thing.
It's not.
It's the same thing.
No, that's hate.
What's different?
The tuna casserole is constructed from the ground up. Like, you don't need no prepackaged nonsense there.
Okay, so what's coming in the tuna helper box? Noodles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then what? A packet that turns to cheese sauce?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just because you're using real cheese, you think that changes the fact that you're taking a canned fish and putting it with a dairy product?
Delicious.
So gross. Is it okay or not okay to cut a deadbeat addict parent out of your kid's life?
Whew. First of all, it is okay as a parent to do whatever it takes to protect your kid, to protect them physically, to protect them emotionally. You have to do whatever you can as a healthy, sober parent. That said, addiction's a brutal disease. I had no experience with it except for a few friends who had some substance issues who went to rehab and got themselves clean, but it was never really a part of my life until it was. It's very difficult to get your head around, especially as a parent, how anyone could make decisions, or not even decisions, how anyone could do things that fly in the face of them being a good parent or a present parent or a healthy parent. The disease of addiction rewires the brain, and it takes a great deal of empathy to understand that the addicted parent does not want to do the things that they are doing. All that said, if the parent is harmful to your kid, yeah, it's 100% okay to keep them away from your kid. If they're making decisions like telling your kid, I'm going to be somewhere and not being there, not providing for your kid financially, yeah, it's absolutely okay.
Yeah, and it's I know that I'm sure we'll get some calls from different types of scenarios, but the instance in the article, obviously different because this kid never knew their parent really at all. Right. Like there was never any relationship to be built. I think it becomes drastically different when the kid has had so many good years of a present sober parent, and then it goes down that other pathway. It seems like those decisions would be much harder to make. But you know, my dealings with addiction and what I know is not super vast, but I do know a lot of it when it comes to whether it just be interventions or trying to help everybody involved is you've got to draw some hard lines and you've got to make boundaries. And I think, you know, ultimatums are, I don't know that they always work, but I think they have to be given. And I think, I don't know, this, like there are people who aren't addicts who have no problem just totally ignoring their kids. So
right.
it's almost like, are we blaming this guy, you know, the fact that he's a deadbeat on the fact that he's an alcoholic, or if he got sober, would he still not give an F about his kids? So like in this specific instance, it's hard to say, but I think saying, you know, you in this condition, in the state of addiction, like you can't have a relationship with your kid. I don't think that's an out of bounds boundary to draw.
Not at all. You have to have boundaries, especially with addiction, and telling a parent until you're ready to get help I can't have you around our kid might be what it takes to get your kid healthy. I mean, to get your baby daddy or baby mommy healthy. That's what they might need to hear so that they can get healthy for the kid.
It is crazy. We every time we bring up intervention, we talk about how there's always the sad update. Like, I wonder, because it's always ultimatums. Like the intervention leader person tells them, like, you gotta make ultimatums, and you've got to tell them what you're going to physically do to make life harder for them or to just change things. I'd be curious to know how many of the people, like, just on the show end up sticking to what they said they were going to do,
right,
if the person didn't get sober.
It's a great question. And addiction is a brutal disease that is so hard to understand until you're there in it. But I will tell you, if you can avoid taking things personally and show empathy and support, you won't regret that. Now, should your kid be around it? No, your kid should not be around a parent that is using substances.
Well, that's the thing too, is not taking things personally when you're watching it affect your kid. Like that
it's almost impossible.
I would say, yeah, it is. I mean, nobody like has that freedom to cause your kid mental or physical anguish. And, mm-hmm. and anybody who's doing that, whether it's somebody you made a baby with or not, I'm sure, like you said, borderline impossible to not take it personally or get your emotions involved.
So hard to do. 727-579-1025 and 800-771-1025. Drew Grubb live with John Senning. Who are you?
Hi, Drew. John, my name's Denise from Sarasota.
Hey, Denise from Sarasota. What up?
Do you guys remember me calling like a year ago telling you that my grandkids were in Kentucky and I got to get them? My daughter was arrested.
Oh, I
you guys remember that?
I do. I'm not going to lie. I'm having a little bit, I'm having some flashbacks.
I don't.
I am having some flashbacks.
And I remember you didn't believe me, but that's cool. That's all good. But my daughter knows her way around the system that is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
So your daughter is an addict, you were going to Kentucky to retrieve your grandbabies. Did you retrieve your grandbabies?
I did. I could not take them out of state.
Why not?
The state said, no, it happens here. They have to stay here.
What?
And that's where they stayed.
What was the final straw that made you be heading up there to get them?
I got a phone call from people. We've been trying to get them to take those kids for a long time, and they knew the system. They knew their way around, and how they got busted was a UPS guy saw them passed outside in their front lawn.
Oh my God.
And that's the other element too, is that I think, you know, to people that maybe haven't dealt with it, and I haven't in a bunch, but you look at the addict as somebody who's so addled that they don't have the wherewithal or the mental aptitude to be manipulative. But I think at some point a lot of people learn what they need to do and what they need to say to get what they want. And especially when it comes to legalities and things like that. So I think that whether it's a direct symptom of the addiction or not, they're almost forced into this scenario where they have to learn how to adapt. And that probably means lying to everyone.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. 727-579-1025.
That was anticlimactic.
It's a hell of a thing, that disease of addiction. It will turn you into a different person, make you prioritize different things, and it's so hard for us who don't suffer from that disease to understand it, you know? And all you want to do is protect your kid. Drew Grubb live with John Senning.
Hello.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Linda. How are you?
Very well, Linda. Is it okay or not okay to shield your kids from an addict of a parent?
Yes. And no, it's not okay.
Whoa.
Okay, so, but let me explain.
Please.
Let me explain, right?
Listen, Linda.
So if they have yes, it is. Listen, Linda. When the person has an addiction, I would suggest you go with supervised visitation. I am a proponent. I've been a single parent my whole life with four kids, and I never kept them away from their father. Now, he only visited once a year, but I never spoke bad about him. I never kept him away from him. He wasn't an addiction, so that wasn't the problem, but he was just never around. I just feel like a parent should be allowed to spend time with the child. If they're addicted, well, then it should be supervised.
But what if that parent is a shell of their former self and they're on substances, high on cocaine, crack, heroin, meth, whatever? Certainly, Linda, you wouldn't want that around your kids, right?
You are correct. However, and you know, you would stipulate that, you know, in order to see the kids, it would be with me, and you would have to be in an acceptable, you know, mind frame when you're visiting with the kids and I. You know, there is something to be learned from being around a person that is struggling, right? You learn empathy. You know, you learn what not to do. You know, it's just you don't choose your parents, and we don't choose our kids either, right?
We don't.
But I feel like there's got to be an open door in a sense where everyone is safe, right?
Yeah, I see your point, but if a parent is high on something, I don't think it's healthy for them to be around the kid and vice versa.
Well, and I mean, we're also, you know, we're creating scenarios that don't necessarily exist. Like, I think in this specific story, it was like the guy was always promising to be around, and he never was. Ugh. So, you know, if you've got one day a year, and this is it, and the guy always shows up, and it's an hour, and you let him see it, and it's supervised, and he takes a drug test before, then maybe those scenarios sure. all come together. But I think it's the idea of repeatedly, like, letting down a kid, whether it's not showing up, whether it's saying he'll call or she'll call and doesn't. I think it's just kind of that cycle of like the kid constantly being let down that you would just try to get them out of, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And that has lasting effects on a kid too, because that's gonna haunt them well into adulthood, being let down by a parent like that. Drew Grob Alive with John Senning. Who are you?
My name is Andy.
Andy, what do you think? Okay or not okay to keep an addict parent away from a kid?
It's a slippery slope, and it's a tough one because I've lived it, and I've been there, and I've had a child taken away from me because of my issues.
Oh, man.
And I voluntarily put myself into rehab to try to straighten things out. But in this particular case, I think it's absolutely okay. The child doesn't need to be exposed to that, be around that. She doesn't need to be exposed to that and around that. There's no good that's going to come from that.
Right on, man. Tell me, if you don't mind digging up a painful memory, tell me, like, thank you. Tell me the circumstances of you having your kid taken away.
Yeah, I had a problem with drinking too much, and she didn't get taken away from me, but my wife took my daughter and left. I came home one day on a Friday afternoon after work, bro, and she was gone, and the kid was gone, and it wasn't until Monday till I even figured out where they were. She went back up to her mom's way out of state, and It crushed me, and it made me realize that I had an issue.
Sure.
And the issue was me, and I was the only one that could fix it. And so I checked myself into a rehab voluntarily.
Good for you. That must have been rock bottom for you, realizing that you were going to lose your kid.
Your ultimate rock bottom, and they say it in AA all the time, is when you die. Yeah, it was a super low. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And it made me realize that I needed to turn my life around, or it wasn't going to get any better. And rehab opened my eyes to so much. And I'm not going to lie, it's been 4 years ago since I went, and I've had a trip here and there, and I haven't fallen back off into the deep hole, but
good.
I haven't been a perfect angel either.
Yeah.
But it has opened my eyes to life and the things that it can cost you. And alcoholism and addiction is a brutal, brutal son of a gun.
Yeah, man. Good for you for keeping it clean, dude, and getting your life together, man. Really appreciate you.
Thanks for the ear, bro.
Yeah, absolutely. Two of them. That feeling of getting your kid taken away. 727-579-1025 and 800-771-1025. And even that's not enough for some people,
well,
you know?
And that's the thing, you know, like he said, they didn't get taken away. But they were by, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think it always has to be like the state sanctioned your kid being taken away for them to take the kid and realize this is no good. And then I'm sure a lot of courts, depending on the trail of evidence left behind, aren't going to be in a rush to make sure that you can see your kid if you are going through it like that.
Drew Grob Alive with John Senning. Who are you?
Hey, this is Maxine. How you guys doing?
Hi, Maxine. We don't hear from a lot of Maxines. Thanks a lot for calling.
I know people. I get that a lot. I listen to you guys a lot, but I think it's been a while since I called in. But I like listening to the station. So,
thank you.
I would say it is a slippery slope. I'm a child of an addict mother. My mom has been addicted to crack cocaine since I was probably 2. I'm 38 now.
Yeah.
And she still is to this day. So I agree with you. It definitely can affect the child long term. So I was in foster care most of my childhood. You know, she would pop up every once in a while at my door and say hi, like randomly once or twice a year. That definitely leaves a lasting impression. So I feel like if it's not going to be like a consistent super five visit, it doesn't help the child in the long run to randomly see their parent. It doesn't. If it's not going to be consistently supervised where they're always seeing them and they're consistently seeing their parent and spending that time with them, then I don't think it is a good thing for them. You know, it has nothing to do with giving grace. You know, if we just gave grace to every situation, we would be just letting anything fly. So I don't think it's a grace situation at all.
It's almost it's really better, Maxine, to like have the absence there and have the kid wonder where their parent is rather than to have them see a parent who's addled or struggling with addiction.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a child, I used to think that I got the worst end of the stick by, you know, not knowing where my mom was, where's my mom. But as I got older, I realized that absence, I would have rather never saw her than to be in the same home with her.
Yeah,
I
get that.
It made me turn out better. So I think that absence is better if what they're going to witness is not a good example. You know, it's better just to stay away, get yourself clean, and then come back around when you're, you know, able to be your best for your kids and yourself.
Right on, Maxine. Don't be such a stranger. Great phone call. Thank you.
Well, you guys are always busy. You have so many calls coming through, so I was lucky to get through, but I appreciate you guys. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I'll give you my cell. Don't you worry about it. You hear that all the time. I hate that all my addiction references are intervention, but people say almost, not that they're wishing for death, but like that comes almost with a calmness and a peace, especially for these probably more like on the heroin end and stuff where these kids are always out or people are always out, you know, doing quests and doing God knows what to get their drugs. And it's almost like when somebody passes, the thoughts of the worst case scenario and where are they and why aren't they here and all of that go away. And at least you know where they are.
That relentless beast of addiction. I have a friend who struggles with it, and he said he relapsed a couple of months ago. And, you know, I asked, like, is it an everyday thing where you have to go through one day at a time? He's like, absolutely. He said, if I let myself slip that much, next thing you know, I'm going to be living in hotels and trying to get crack.
And is that one of the steps?
What?
One day at a time. That feels like something that
I think that's their overarching the Alcoholics Anonymous overarching motto. I don't know that it's one of the 12 steps. I think the 12 steps are like acceptance, give it up to a higher power. Drew Garber live with John Senning.
Hey, what's up, guys? Man, my last caller, she made me feel marrying something. That's a strong woman.
Hell yeah.
But no, my childhood got destroyed from it. It was lost alcoholism, stuff like that. Lost our house, divorce. Jeez. Everybody got split up, run away. You know, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But I think it's, if somebody doesn't have their kids taken away, how are they going to learn from it? Because nobody actually sobers up until they hit that rock bottom. You know, I've been around addiction my whole life, my whole family, until you actually realize people that say addiction's a disease, that's a cop out, man. A disease, my ex-wife died of cancer. That's a disease. A disease is not you getting in your car and going to get more.
Well,
that's not a disease. That's a choice.
Well, you're getting it conflated. That choice comes from the addiction of disease, or the disease of addiction.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I could be an addict too. My whole family is.
Right. Well, you might have the disease. You might have the disease, genetically, heredity, or whatever. But like,
yeah, I'm just saying that word disease.
You can manage it.
It's a little too much for saying it for addiction.
I mean, that's your opinion. There are medical professionals who disagree. There are probably medical professionals who agree. I happen to think it is. I think some people can manage it better than others, but, you know, to say that it's absolutely not when you saw it destroy everything around you, I understand your perspective. I mean, I'm very lucky. My parents never drank. Like, my mom now will have a glass of wine, but I never saw my parents drunk once. My dad, I think in the 18, 19 years I lived at home, I might have seen him have one beer, which is odd.
It's interesting. Thinking back to Maxine's call when she talked about like not deserving grace, it's almost like you think of grace and you feel like, and there was that other lady that called too that was like, you should just be kind and you should do this and make everything, whatever you got to do to make it possible. I think there's probably a thin line between giving grace and being an enabler, where if you aren't doing things to make life more difficult, you're making life easier for an addict. And if they're not seeing the real life repercussions in real time, that makes it easier for them to go on doing what they're doing.
And that's a great point. And like when there's a kid involved, half of you is thinking, if I can get this person around their kid more,
yeah,
that'll be enough to snap her out of it. But the other half is, I got to keep her away from the kid because maybe that'll make her snap out of it.
Yeah. That's tough.
And in the middle, you got a kid who's like, where's my mom? What's happening? Why is my mom not around? And as a responsible parent, you don't tell them everything, but you got to tell them something. You got to let them know this isn't about you. This isn't about you not being loved. This is about a terrible disease of addiction. It's easier when your kid is old enough to understand what that's all about. But for like, how do you explain that to a five-year-old, six-year-old?
I don't think you can.
No, you absolutely cannot. And all you can do as a parent is kind of try to shield them from it. Hi, Drew Gubb live with John Senning. Who are you?
Hi, my name is Catherine.
Hi, Catherine. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm so thankful that I got through because this topic is, it hits my heart really hard right now because I'm kind of going through a situation like this.
Talk to me.
So my biological son from my previous husband, as a parent, and especially as a mother, it is your job to protect your child. And my son was 7 when we started to get divorced. And it was my job to protect him, not just from the world, but from his own father.
Right.
And that was a huge weight on my shoulders for many years because I knew that eventually I would probably be the bad guy. But my son is now 25 and it took him, I just had to step back and realize that I was telling the truth. I was protecting him for his own good. And when he was about 19, he went back to live with his father and he realized what alcoholism does to a person. And then currently with my current husband, who's about to be my ex-husband, my stepdaughter, she's had it very difficult because you can give grace to an addict. And I used to believe that using a disease, you know, it's a disease was a cop out like the last gentleman said, but it's not because I have supported my husband. He's been in prison for a year and a half. He's been in and out of jail. He hid crack and cocaine from me many, many times. And it was, I was supportive and loving and caring and what can I do and what do you need from me? And please explain it to me. How can I help? And that didn't do any good. And then the flip side is tough anger love. And frustration.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter because 3 years ago, my husband bought Adderall that was unfortunately laced with fentanyl.
Oh.
And I saved my husband's life. And that was 2 years ago, and he went to jail again and came back and went right back to the same thing,
Jesus.
Crack and cocaine.
Ugh.
And to have his stepdad and myself drag his lifeless body, because he wasn't breathing, out of the vehicle and giving him CPR while I was on the phone with 911, it will haunt me for the rest of my days, because even him, like, not breathing and going to the hospital because he overdosed on fentanyl was not enough to snap my husband out of his disease. And right now he's in a recovery center in Arkansas for 90 days. I have my own opinions on recovery, like how long should someone be? But when you are physically not breathing and you still go back to the same addictions, it shows how much a hold an addiction can be. But as far as keeping children away from their parent, I absolutely think 100% it is okay, because it is your job to protect that child, even from their own parents. And it, if you allow the child to see a parent, you know, using or under the influence of alcohol or drugs or whatever, it's kind of perpetuating the situation. Drugs are so rampant, and we have so many people that have addictions with drugs and alcohol. There's no reason a child at any age should see that at all.
Well, you've been through a hell of a lot, and I commend you on being strong for your kids. It's a difficult situation to be in. Those who have not been in anything close probably can't relate. I certainly can, especially the age of divorce, and then, you know, the years after that, and to a certain degree, jail and prison. And it doesn't just mess up
someone's life. Right. It can end their life.
Yep.
And it can destroy a marriage, because I'm in the process of divorcing my husband, because it's been 6 years we've been together. We've been married for three, and it's like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
When he's sober, he's one person. When he's on crack and cocaine, he's completely different. And I can't even explain how much like damage that puts somebody else in.
Right on.
And his own daughter has said, you know, I want you to see me graduate college. I want you to see, walk me down the aisle. I want you to see your grandkids. And there's only so many words you can tell an addict, but it's one thing's for sure. It's up to that person to want to change.
Right on.
Nobody
sister.
And that's what I've been trying to do, is fix, you know, trying to help my husband conquer his addiction. And I finally had to say, no, this is enough. It is not my problem to fix. It's yours.
Right on. Keep it up. Thank you very much for calling. I'm really glad you
Thank
got through
you.
Too. Thank you.
All right.
That's brutal, dude. 727-579-1025 and 800-771-1025. We're talking about whether it is okay or not okay to shield a kid from their addict of a parent. Hello there. Who are you?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I think your question really ought to be, how do you not shield your kid?
Well, I see your point, but you also have to try to keep your kid and that parent to have a relationship so it does not get severed. You know what I mean?
I hear you, man, but he wants nothing to do with her, man. Not a thing to do with her. He's been meeting him since he was 8, and I wouldn't have it any other way, man.
Does he not want to have anything to do with her because of the way he feels, or have you kind of, I don't want to say poison the well, but influence the way that he thinks?
From what he's seen. From what he's seen, man. She gets drunk on the wild turkey, and you can forget about it. Left him.
Got you.
8-year-old boy.
Any thought, any potential that she could work through her issues and become a sober person and a present parent, or have you given up on that?
We gave up on it. You have to want to.
Well, you can want to and still not have it happen. I don't judge you for your choices. You do what you do to protect your kid, for sure. Drew Gobble live with John Senning. Who are you?
Hey, this is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's up, man?
Chilling.
I just wanted to chime in. I was a fentanyl and heroin addict for 17 years, and I've got three daughters. And, you know, my significant other, who I've been with for 9 years, she kept me away from my kids, and it was the best thing that she ever did for me and my kids.
Wow. Did you realize that at the time, or is that you're able to see it now looking back without anger?
No. It took me going to prison and finding God and getting out and changing my whole life, man, in order for me to realize that she made the best decision for me and for my family. And, you know, we're still together, and
awesome.
We're happier than we've ever been, man.
Good for you, Dave. When you say you were addicted to heroin and fentanyl, like you were taking fentanyl separately from the heroin?
Oh, no. I mean, they're mixed together.
Okay.
And I mean, I was smoking crack, and I mean, dude, you name it, man.
Man, PCP, angel dust?
You know, not so much.
Just curious if people still do that. Keep it on the straight and narrow, man. Sounds awesome.
Thanks, man.
Absolutely.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.